powers to praise your name. Return again unto your people. Burns within the royal heart, or an outcast hovel, the sacrificial fire as well, the giver and the gift that's given. You are the heat of a warrior bold, when fighting for the tribe's survival, the fiery passion of our loins, the holy spark of life renewing. Each day as you roar in to bed or battle, your heart that plays the seasons round, your cauldron filled with gifts unending.
Radio and to Tarot Talk. This is Brian. I'm not actually sure what happened to Joy tonight, but I haven't heard anything. So, it looks like I'll be flying solo for the evening, unless she gives me a call sometime. But tonight we're going to be talking about the fours in the pips, the minor arcana, and the major arcanas number 7 and 8, the chariot and strength. So I guess what we'll do is start with the fours, because I don't know, makes sense. The minor arcana are your various cards that cover elements. So the sorry about that. I'm just seeing what's going on. And, okay, so the fours are basically, they're kind of dealing with the energy of like foundation, structure, formality, that kind of thing. So what you've got here is, I guess we'll take a look at the Four of Wands. Okay, so the Four of Wands is typically in the majority of decks based on the Rider-Waite. You have some sort of scene in which people are, like, there's either people in it or there's not. But the essential idea is that the Four of Wands are holding up the corners of kind of a little marriage shelter kind of thing. It actually represents kind of the structure of a relationship or marriage kind of deal. So, sorry, folks. I'm a little bit thrown off tonight. Four of Wands talks about kind of a time of rest. It talks about like a special celebration to mark kind of the reaching of a particular stage in your life. It's about happiness and blessing and, you know, a good solid business partnership kind of thing. When you pull that card, because the wands tend to represent energy and that sort of thing, you're kind of dealing with everything in the positive, the affirmative kind of wedding experience, vacations, like kind of a happy ending to a situation. Now, when you're dealing with the reverse of it, as with most reversals, you're dealing with kind of either a delay or the, not entirely the opposite, but rather a delay in the arrival of whatever the card is representing. So what you deal with here then is kind of a reduced meaning of the original upright, like, meaning. So it's not a negative card in any way that it comes up. It's kind of like it represents a delay, like a reversed Four of Wands represents kind of delay in your plans, something unavoidable that, you know, it doesn't signal the end of the project in the midst of it, but rather something has slowed you down. In construction terms, it would be like the financial backer kind of crapped out of your plan and basically, you know, like pulled out for a while to get the funds going again, so that the work could continue. Now, when you're dealing with fours overall, like if you see a lot of fours in a reading, what that can tend to mean is like sort of it's all about logic and reason, coagulation, things kind of coming together. And if you've got a lot of fours in the spread, it tends to mean that you're talking about laying foundations for continuation or starting of a project. Now, the energy of four is connected with Saturn as well, so it relates to karma as well. Now, a reversed Four of Wands talks about like people with inhibitions, like the people who are poor servers in their work. The Four of Pentacles is typically depicts a guy sitting in the throne. The typical keyword that I come up with when I see this card is miser. Represents kind of holding on to things, almost a white knuckle grip on you know, your finances, a sense of not wanting to be generous out of perhaps a sense of fear that you are not able to afford a situation, or like the plans that you have set up. The Four is also basically a card that sort of signifies maintaining the status quo, keeping things under the mainstream. So you're kind of talking about a very like structured, traditional kind of education or work environment. This is also a card representing deeply ingrained beliefs. If someone's asking about like how they're going to do on an exam and a Four of Pentacles comes up upright, then the basic idea there is that they're going to pass. So, you know, if you've got like a student coming to you for a reading, by all means, you know, take the time. And if you see this card come up, it's probably a good sign that they're going to do well in school, especially if that's a concern of theirs. Now, the thing too with this is that because of that association with the status quo, maintaining the traditional sort of way of things, what might, like, in a reading for someone who seems rather, I want to kind of use the cheesy term, artsy, or really liberal or free-spirited, it may kind of indicate a need to sort of rein in the enthusiasm kind of thing, to kind of get back on track, because sometimes getting too uninhibited can lead to unplanned results, less success than you want. Now, if this comes up in a relationship related reading, then you're dealing with kind of the idea of some material, like financial, for instance, associations that are interfering with the relationship. You know, this usually indicates like a fight about money and that sort of thing. But reversed, you've got really strong energy in a four pence reverse of the miser, that greedy kind of energy. a feeling of not being financially secure. This is that irresponsible spontaneity, lack of focus kind of thing, that almost guaranteed failure in the outcome of a plan or in a testing situation. This can also actually indicate like sort of negative emotions coming up, sort of feelings of timidity and envy and fear, lack of initiative. And it's a really strong card dealing with money because of the Pentacle Earth energy. So you're dealing with that that sense of wasting money or of not having enough to cover basic necessities. Now, it basically indicates someone who's having difficulty saving money. You know, someone who perhaps is shopaholic in a sense. There would probably be other cards that would come up related to that to indicate that sense of chaos, irresponsibility. I can't think of any offhand at the moment, but you know, this is basically a card of I mean, if you're going to think in the strict archetypal terms, you're dealing with a Scrooge type person. Someone who's worried about money. Now, when you've got a Four of Swords, this is one that a lot of beginners tend to like assume means death. In the Robin Wood deck, what's depicted here is this kind of, I almost want to call it a sarcophagus, in the way it's laid out. You're dealing with concrete kind of bed platform. Four of Swords is an indication of a time to rest, renewal, a time for stepping back and healing, if that's the need. Now, let's see. This, like, if you're dealing with a lot of conflict at work or in your daily environment, this kind of indicates that you need to sort of set a truce for a while to sort of take a break from that because it's wearing you down. The card depicts kind of a Sleeping Beauty situation. Other cards, like I've got the Druidcraft Tarot, and that card it depicts like a warrior kind of sitting there with four swords leaning against a tree. And again, there's that energy of relaxation, of taking a break, needed respite for the sake of healing or just regaining energy. A Four of Swords reversed, like if the indication is more of a positive spin, you have the sort of energy of getting things back on track, like starting things up again. You know, the break is over kind of thing. It's time to move forward. If you're dealing with kind of a more negative read, then it can indicate layoffs, problems at work, feelings of isolation and illness, resentment, withdrawal. It's basically the sense of being less than content with things. Disappointment is a strong energy with the Four of Swords reversed. But yeah, I mean, in the reading, it can actually indicate like prisoners when it's a four reversed. or unwelcome guests who overstay, you know, the invitation kind of situation. Now, the Four of Cups is a really cool cup or a card. It's basically this dude sitting against a tree looking at three cups, and there's a fourth one kind of hovering in the sky next to him. Now, this card basically indicates a sense of dissatisfaction, kind of, boredom, isolation, apathy. It can indicate the onset of depression, which, you know, I mean, other cards will indicate probably sort of more details about the reasons surrounding that onset. Again, you know, you've got the energy of a lack of motivation coming up, and that again has to do with the four energy. This can also indicate, I don't remember if it was like in our first episode or something. I think we mentioned the kind of on the honeymoon period of a relationship where, you know, you basically never see each other's flaws. You don't see any sort of problems with one another. And the energy of Four of Cups is kind of an awakening, the honeymoon being over. Now, I don't know, for some reason, this sounds very familiar. Like, for some reason, it feels like we've done fours before. I don't know why. But that's just my own thing. If we have, by all means, give me a call. Remind me, because I don't want to check online while I'm trying to figure that out. Now, this the Four of Cups basically suggests that the novelty of newness of relationships of new situations has worn off. You're getting kind of bored of it. Things are just becoming too mainstream and common, and like they've lost that fire that drew you originally. Now, when you've got the Four of Cups reversed, this is kind of the end of your dissatisfaction. It's sort of the energy of finding that spark of motivation that you needed to get things going again. And that, you know, I mean, depending on the cards in the reading, that could indicate that someone has come into the situation that has reawakened that enthusiasm. I can think of people that have come into my life who, at the time I met them, they were going through like a period of, well, one person in particular, who keeps coming to mind when I think of this kind of energy is a friend of mine that I met on Tumblr like a year ago. And at the time we met, he was going through kind of a spiritual crisis. And, you know, he was really abundantly enthusiastic about his spirituality, except that it was kind of unfocused and he didn't really have encouragement and support in the things that he wanted to explore. When I first started talking to him, he was on the verge of basically giving up. And, you know, we started talking. So in a sense, I became that kind of renewal in his spirituality. But at the same time, because over the course of, you know, the past year, his interests have, you know, jumped around a bit. He's actually sort of refreshed my own interest in a lot of the things that I studied early on in my own spiritual journey. So it becomes, at least in that situation, it became a tit for tat kind of thing. You know, I perked up his enthusiasm, gave him some focus, and, you know, allowed him to carry on and struggle through. But he also gave me the gift of kind of a renewed enthusiasm in my own spiritual journey. So for the past year, say, I've kind of become someone who people ask about spirituality and things like that, which, you know, is really helpful for me as well, because it encourages me to take the time to learn new things. And I mean, I can always recommend books to people. Okay, so like some of the more negative aspects of the Four of Cups are like self-pity, excess, you know, depression, exhaustion, sort of missing the boat. Now, it's something that you want to tell people when you get sort of these depressed energies is don't let it get you down, because if someone allows that negativity to give me a sec, folks. I'm going to play a little tune because someone has arrived.
On tonight.
Hi, folks. Joy has joined us.
Hey, everyone. Sorry about that. Life got in the way, so.
Life does.
Yes, it always does. Okay. I understand Brian has been talking to y'all for the last half hour about the fours, There were a few things that I wanted to talk to you all about in regards to them. If you look at all the fours and you lay them out next to each other, you can see that they're a time period between a start and a finish. That's typically what the fours are. They're waiting periods. And that's especially prevalent with the Four of Swords. I mean, if you look at it, there's a guy, he's in his mausoleum. He looks like he's dead. He's also, you know, got four swords there. And that is that always comes up as a time of waiting, a time of rest, a time of going, okay, I can't do anything about the situation. Everything that I've started is in process, so all I've got to do is just be patient. This is also typically shown by things like the Hanged Man or the Seven of Pentacles, but this is more of a... It's where last week we were talking about death being a transmutation from one state to another, the Four of Swords typically in my deck comes up as an actual physical death because you can't really do anything after that. And then when you look at the Four of Pentacles, here's a guy who is hoarding his money. And that's, you know, the mnemonic for this is greed and miserliness. Well, when you interpret it with the rest of the fours, this is not a miser so much as a time period when you need to stop doing what you're doing, you need to hang on to your cash, you need to keep it close because you're going to need it later. Okay, let's see. Sorry, my heart is going crazy right now. The Four of Wands. In the Robin Wood deck, it is a couple who are dancing under a canopy, and the Four Wands are holding the canopy over them. Okay, this is a reminder that you need to slow down. You need to enjoy life. You need to look around and see what's going on. You need to take time out for yourself. And it's another waiting period of being able to stay there and go, okay, I've gotten to a certain point, and this is a nice time to relax and to enjoy myself with the people around me. The Four of Cups typically is seen as a choice between what you have and what you could have. And once again, this is another between time, a time of waiting, where you're contemplating the choices that you have. Because you have a choice, you have three cups there that are physical and in front of you, and you have one cup that is in the spiritual realm that is behind you and you know is there, and it's a possibility. It's a lot like a bird in a hand is worth two in a bush. Because you already have the three cups and you have the potential to get another one or to give those three cups up and get the fourth, which might be better, but but you're making a decision. You're contemplating your choices. You are looking at your options. Let's see. One thing that I'm being reminded of is on the Four of Wands, that can also be seen as the typical Jewish marriage. They get because they get married underneath the canopy.
That's what I said.
Oh, you did?
I did.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Hilarious.
I didn't get to hear the first half hour of the show because I was out getting stuff. Okay. So, yeah, I was reminded about that by my wife, so that's nice that she does that. The fours can also be about balance once again. It's a time to take, you know, time and look at what you have. It's a time to rest. It's a time to get your balance back so that you can continue on with your life. Okay? And that's essentially it. I mean, the fours are pretty easy. The symbolism is very, very in your face. And I'm sure Brian gave you all kinds of interpretations for his, so let's move on to the major arcana. I believe we did the lovers last week, so that means that we are up to strength and
the chariot.
So the chariot is first. That is card number 8, I believe.
Seven and eight.
Okay. And apparently there's some kind of debate as to what order the cards come in. In Robin's book of her deck, she says that she chose to put the chariot. Is it the chariot? Let me look real quick. Where she did, because it seems to go there.
Well,
no,
I think the debate is well. There's actually I can't remember which deck it is. There's another like sort of base deck that follows that's sort of the opposite of the Rider Waite. The 8 and the 11 are usually switched between them.
Yeah.
So that some decks will have the strength card as number 11. But the majority of the ones that I tend to own or use are strength being number 8.
Yeah, and that would follow because strength and the chariot balance each other. They're the same thing, but they're two different sides of the same coin. With the chariot, I never really understood this because the chariot stands for physical strength, okay? But more than that, it is it's more about balance and harmony. And instead of physical strength with your arm and your physical body, it's a strength, an inner strength, an intestinal fortitude, as my father used to call it. It is not necessarily your willpower. That's more the strength, the actual strength card. It's an ability to do things with not only your skills, but also your knowledge and the physical things around you. It's not just about willing it to be. It's about using the tools around you to manifest something. It's kind of the continuation of the magician in a lot of ways. The magician is strength and the chariot together, where he's using his magical powers and his strength of will to manifest physical objects. In the chariot, it's using the physical objects you have to get what you want. Because he's not, you know, controlling the unicorns or the horses or the goats or whatever that your particular deck shows with his arms. He's controlling them with music and with his voice, okay? Now, this harkens back to the bards, and it can. I don't know if it should, but that's another alternate interpretation, I guess. But in this case, he's using his voice, he's using the music around him to soothe the savage beast so that he can control them, so they're not running all over the place and attacking things and taking him on a wild ride. He's using that music and using his skill in presenting beautiful music to keep them calm, to keep them in control, to keep them going the direction that he wants them going in. And that's what the chariot is about. It's about using the tools that you have available to get what you want. Okay. Conversely, the strength card, which in almost every deck I know of represents the astrological sign Leo, which would follow because there's a big lion on it, is about strength of will. Here is a woman who, in the misogynistic society that we live in, is seen as being the weaker sex, who has this huge lion that's there, that she is not only pushing the lion's mouth closed with her hand without any fear, but she's also decorated it up with flowers in its mane and ribbons and bells and things like that. And the lion is submitting to all of it. He's going, okay, you know, whatever. And, okay, there's a lady here who's pushing my mouth closed. All right, so I'm not going to eat her. And she is causing the lion to not react like a typical lion would, simply through her strength of will and her strength of character. And that strength in a nutshell. Brian, do you have any with those?
Well, what comes to mind here with numerologically speaking, I mean, with the sevens, like in the case of the chariot, I mean, this is an energy of mysticism and magic and, you know, divine justice kind of thing. So, I mean, there's a very strong energy of mysticism involved. So the association with bards does actually make quite a bit of sense. And what occurs to me is that this card, similar to the energy of the magician, and I don't remember, I think we talked about it when we talked about the twos, was that sense of the interaction between opposite polarities being necessary in order to manifest their power, right? So you've got, like, on the Robin Wood chariot card, you have a black unicorn and a white unicorn. Mm-hmm. Basically, the idea that I'm putting forward here is that because there's also a yin-yang symbol in the card, they're indicating that sort of harmony between the opposite forces, the middle way kind of thing, being the way of producing results with your intention.
Yeah, except it's not the polarity between the two of them. It's not the fact that there are two opposing forces pulling against each other to create what you want. It's the combination of the two working together to get what you want. So instead of, like, with the twos, where it's yin pulling against yang and the center place is where everything springs from, it's yin pushing against yang and those two becoming more than just what they are by themselves.
Well, for sure. I mean, like, the Hermetic Law of Polarity comes to mind when I think of this card, in the sense that it isn't like the divergence of the two powers. It is that necessary merging in order for them to produce, you know, their outcome. There's also mention in a lot of different books, the association with the stars above the charioteer, being kind of like that association with the mystical intuition, etc. Now, with the strength card, I was actually thinking about this earlier because I'm writing a post for my blog talking about the energy of the maiden and the unicorn. Because there was a post on my dash that came up with a picture of a unicorn. I was like, you know, I really should write about that.
How is this a horse, which is usually seen as a masculine symbol with a long pointy thing sticking out of its head, very phallic, seen as a symbol of maidenism and virginity?
Well, that's just it, right? Like, it's a totally alchemical thing. Like, I mean, you'll see when I write the post, but I'm going to sort of sum it up while I talk about the strength card. Basically, I think it's Eden Gray that talks about the symbolism of the animal in the strength card. It usually is a lion. I don't know if there's other symbols that come up in different decks. Personally, I have never seen it, but the animal in the strength card is almost always a lion, and this represents both the animal instinct and animal nature of the human species, but it also represents kind of that masculine sexual energy. So what the strength card can indicate sometimes is kind of responsible use of the sexual desire and the libido. It can sometimes suggest kind of a period of like chastity, kind of restraint from sexual excess. Now reverse, I suppose, an extension of that same idea would be the kind of the, I don't want to use the word, but I can't think of another that means the same, kind of a slut energy. You know, so you've got kind of like the dichotomy between the virgin and the whore, using their sexual energy, in different ways.
Yeah.
And
I've pulled up a couple of other decks. The pagan deck, strength is, doesn't have a lion in it at all. It's got a bear, a fox, a wolf, and some other small forest creatures like a badger and a rat. So it's all basically the same thing, too.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the whole idea with that is going to be the same in every deck. And I'm actually just going to flip through the book for my Druidcraft tarot because I am thinking I'm going to start using it more often, actually.
And let's see. Reversed for strength shows weakness, sickness, lack of faith, despotism, discord, abuse of power, and fear of loneliness. And the sickness and the lack of faith I can understand because this is all about strength of will. So if you lose that strength of will, it would be, you know, a lack of faith and a weakness. I don't know about despotism, but that's what it says.
Some of the key phrases from the Druidcraft Tarot book say inability to integrate passions, torment from within. Whenever we feel conflicted, we experience weakness and indecision.
Though
sometimes we react by acting aggressively or with excessive defiance and pride.
Yeah, and so that would follow with the despotism. I hadn't really considered that because here you have a somebody who is ruling and controlling through strength of will, and when that gets to be too self-involved and too prominent and gets out of balance once again, that can turn into despotism, and any disagreement is automatically treason, and you kill them and things like that. So while that could be reflected in the Emperor as well, it does fit with strength card. Let's see, the Chariot reversed says trouble, defeat, failure, collapse of hopes and dreams, unfavorable legal proceedings. I don't know about the legal proceedings, but we'll think about that for a bit. But once again, it's you're using your tools to manifest what you want, and in this case, you're using them, and it's not working properly, or you're not getting what you want, in that you're using a hammer to try to drive a screw, and you're never going to get it because you're using you're trying to outthink the situation instead of actually using the stuff like it's designed to do. Mary is saying brain, not heart, and demanding that the universe give you what it is that you want instead of letting the universe present it as a consequence of the actions and using what you have. So that's another thing to be thinking about. Let's see. Going through, and then we've got the classic... Radiant Rider Waite here, and they got sphinxes in the chariot and the canopy, And oh, in the strength card, the lady has the infinity symbol over her head. So that's another indication of extreme psychic gifts, like the priestess and the magician have. So that would follow that she would have a lot of strength of will. And now my cats are fighting all over me. Hang on.
Actually, yeah, the Druid Craft Tarot has a boar in the strength card. Sorry.
Oh, okay, cool. And looking at the Celtic Tarot, they associate Agma with the strength card. And
interesting.
Nadu Ericsson, Nuada. With the chariot. Yep, Nuada.
I don't get the Agma association.
Let's see. After having killed Taratha, Agma unsheathed his sword and cleaned it away with blood and dust. It told him the feats it had accomplished. Then Agma, who was in possession of the secrets of the scripture, obtained the power to preserve the spells in the sword. In the swords. Equality, receptitude, honesty, executive power, law, what is written, and greater power. Okay. Seems like the Celtic Tarot has very, very different associations here. they're Celts, what do you expect? Okay. Yeah, because Agma brought writing to the Celts.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, that's what I don't get with the whole, did you say chariot card?
Yeah, the chariot with Nuada is actually understandable.
Sorry, yeah.
He kept the Celts going even when supposedly amongst their own custom, he wasn't a suitable king. Well, I mean, you know, in the first battle of Moytura, he lost his hand. That's where he gets the epithet of the Silver Hand. And
yeah.
The Celts at the time were very much in perfection of the physical body. And you could not be king with a physical defect of any kind. And since, you know, strength was the quality that was looked for amongst the Celtic rulership, Nuada with, you know, a hand missing wasn't suitable to be king anymore because he couldn't hold a sword. He couldn't, you know, fight in a fist fight. He only had one hand to use anything with. And then when the healer came along and, you know, crafted him a silver hand and put it on, he was an acceptable substitute, even though he wasn't as perfect as he could be, because it was a fake hand.
That's interesting, actually, because now I'm thinking of crap. There's a god in Norse pantheon who sacrifices his
Tyr.
Hand.
Yeah, Tyr. He did it on a promise, though. With that story, Fenris Wolf the Norse gods got together and decided that something had to be done about the Fenris Wolf. He was just going crazy. He was causing too much chaos and trouble. They tried binding him up with chains and cables and steel and everything. And every time he broke it, and they had the dwarves create a magical fetter out of hopes and dreams of humanity and quite a number of other mystical things. And it was just this tiny little thin thread. And the Fenris Wolf, when presented with it, was rightfully very suspicious. You know, they've tried the thickest cables they can possibly come up with, and he broke through them. But here they come with a thread. And he's like, okay, something's going on here. And he wouldn't let them put it on him unless somebody was willing to put their hand in his mouth. And Tyr stepped up to the plate, took one for the team, stuck his right hand, the hand that he used to hold a sword with, into the Fenris Wolf's mouth. They tied him up. He, of course, couldn't break it, bit off Tyr's hand, and Tyr didn't remove his hand once the trap was sprung. He stood there and took it because he promised. So, yeah, and he's still, you know, a very great god amongst the Norse people. There's quite a number of people that still honor him today because of, you know, his promise and his faithfulness in the face of, guaranteed trauma. So yeah, no, there's a lot of crossover between from what I've seen and what I've studied between the Norse and the Celts. There are associations where Loki can be associated with Lu Samaldanich, Lu of Lu Allskilled, because when he's missing from the pantheon of the Celts, he's usually present in the pantheon of the Norse. So it's possible that a lot of the Norse gods are the same as the gods of the Celts, just given different stories, different cultural spins, and different names, because a lot of the associations are still there.
Yeah, for sure. But I guess, I mean, any of those Indo-European descended pantheons have a lot of similarities, so it's pretty cool. Because, I mean, you can probably find parallels in the Greek pantheon as well. I mean, I'm not going to like look for them right now, but...
mythology is one of my favorite hobbies, so I...
That's totally fine. I'm actually thinking it's funny that we've just sort of like... We've diverged from like strength and the chariot to mythological associations of these gods because of one tarot deck and running off into like, well, then we look at other pantheons and here we are. You know, it's like, this is
good
shit.
What was I saying last week about divergent, you know, chains of thought and stuff?
Oh, it's totally fine. I love it because like, it's so obvious that like, the symbolism in tarot can lead you into that. Like when you're really familiar with particular pantheons, you can actually incorporate your knowledge of those kind of things into the cards. Because I mean, there's no reason not to, right? Like if you're familiar with a particular, say, I don't know, Norse story that relates to, I don't know, the lovers or something, or, you know, if there's a myth or some deity that comes up that associates in your mind with a card that you draw, then by all means, bring it up. Talk to the person about that deity, because it may be an indication that they need to sort of pay attention to some aspect of that deity or to that particular pantheon because there may be something that they can learn from it or, you know, whatever you want to kind of draw into that.
Oh, yeah. And don't be afraid when doing readings for other people. And this is one of the things that I tell new students don't worry about getting off track with some of these things. Because, yeah, your knowledge of the tarot lets you interpret the symbols, but it's still their question. And it's still their associations and their mental preparation for what the cards are telling them through the medium of the reader. So, yeah, if you see a card that says that they're going to have troubles coming up and that leads you to thinking about the troubles that Prometheus went through after bringing fire from the gods and giving it to man, then yes, mention that because there might be something that they would associate that with.
Yeah, I mean, there's no telling what someone else's associations or experience with mythology or the symbolism that comes to your mind as you read. Like, you can't predict the kinds of things that someone else is going to like suddenly relate to that because, like, if you mention Prometheus, I mean, that story is one of rebellion. It's one of like a profound gift that allowed humans to become more than just kind of a desperate scraping species that, you know, struggles to make its way in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, then if you somehow, I don't know, I can't think of a card right now, but if you somehow bring up Pandora's box, I mean, good Lord, there's so much you could do with that.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, that's kind of the way it is with mythology. Like, if you take the time to get familiar with it, and you can actually start tying it to tarot cards, I mean, you're going to be able to open up a world of symbolism that blows people away.
Oh, yeah, and that's one of the things about some of these deck designers. They do that deliberately. I was privileged to be at one of the witches' balls up in Columbus, and where Dorothy Morrison was speaking, and she gave a class on her tarot deck that she had come up with, called I can't even remember the name of it now. Let me find the cards. Where is that? The Whimsical Tarot. And this was associations with classic fables and children's tales to the tarot cards, and illustrating the story and what the card means through these children's tales. I mentioned it, I think, back on the second night when we were doing The Fool and The Magician. And a lot of the stories are, you know, the kid sees the symbol, realizes that it's this story, and they know immediately not only the moral, but all the symbolism that's part of it, and that's the card. So, you know, she does that deliberately in the in that deck. For instance here, the Chariot is looks to be, she just says the Chariot. It's a pumpkin with two mice and going different directions. Strength is Mary Had a Little Lamb, or Little Bo Peep. It's the Little Bo Peep.
Interesting.
Which, that's kind of interesting. I would have to think about that one for a little while. Four of Swords in the Whimsical Tarot is the Princess and the Pea, where she's sleeping on the thousand mattresses.
Sense.
That does make
sense. The four-poster bed kind of association.
Mm-hmm. The Four of Rods is looks to be, well, it's a castle with two bluebirds. I don't know what that one specifically is. Four Pentacles. Oh, it's the dog that saw his reflection in the pool and lost his bone into the pool because he wanted the bone that the other dog had.
Huh.
Greed. Think
that
about it.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yes, it would.
Four of Cups. Funny, that sounds like a deck I want to play with, at least.
Yeah, the Four of Cups is the Emperor's New Clothes. Apparently.
That makes sense. I'm not sure. Yeah, I guess that does make sense, because it's that idea of illusion, of convincing yourself so totally that, you know, you've got everything that everyone else wants, but you're always wanting something different. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the Emperor convinced himself so desperately that he was at the height of fashion because he had this invisible fabric that, you know, was just so rare and ethereal that, you know, that,
yeah. And,
I mean, it's
yeah.
a great story. If you ever want to read a story about awakening from illusion, and you want to avoid talking about our culture, read The Emperor's New Clothes, and you'll be like, wow, that's a crazy story.
It is. But yeah, anyway, she was saying that these associations that she made with the various decks was done deliberately to make it easy for the symbolism of the card to permeate into the subconscious through stories that everybody knows. I mean, if you talk about Romeo and Juliet, not everybody's read Shakespeare, but if you talk about... you know, The Emperor's New Clothes, or Little Lame Prince, or the Owl and the Pussycat. Everybody knows those stories because we grew up with them.
Well, yeah. I mean, most of the older folks, you know. Well, I don't know what kids are exposed to nowadays. I think,
somebody needs to come up with a pop culture tarot deck, maybe... you know, using Nicki Minaj or Rihanna or for some
oh,
of the cards.
God. Pop cartoon deck would be like Adventure Time and SpongeBob and all sorts of crazy ass stuff. Holy crap, the world would just fall apart.
Oh,
South
my
lord.
Dragon Ball Z and Sailor Moon.
Oh,
I
dear
saw
God.
A Sailor Moon card deck that they used to make into Solitaire. Oh, they do have an anime tarot deck. They've got a couple, actually. It's over in Japan. I saw this not too long ago. It was only the Major Arcana, but the cards that were in it were all characters from Rurouni Kenshin.
I don't even watch anime. I have no idea what that is.
Okay, Rurouni Kenshin is set in the Meiji era, right after technology starts coming into Japan, and the samurai are kind of dying out. It's the same time period that The Last Samurai was set in. But Kenshin is a samurai who doesn't have anybody. He's a ronin. But he's retired. He used to be an assassin for the government before the government fell and the Meiji government took over. So he's respected in that he's an extremely competent swordsman, learned his craft very, very well, can kill people without them even knowing it with one blow. But he is feared because he was an assassin and a government assassin. So there's a dichotomy there with the people knowing who he is, knowing him by reputation, but realizing that he's not this horrible guy anymore. In fact, he's taken a vow never to kill anybody again, and while his sword discipline requires the use of a samurai sword, a katana, he's got a reversed blade katana where the edge is on the inside curve of the blade instead of the outside edge like it normally is. So he can still practice his craft, but he's hitting with the back edge of the blade, so he's not killing anybody. And the entire 97-some-odd episodes is centered around his struggle trying to reconcile himself with his past, people coming at him for his past and trying to get him to revert to type that they know he is, and them trying to take revenge for things he did in the past. And then there's the romance with the girl and the friendship with a couple of other people that he's met. But they've taken all the characters from that anime and they made it into a tarot deck. And I saw it at one point. I saw some of the artwork and I was like, okay, one of the characters was one of the cards, and I was like, why did they associate him with that? So, yeah, they do have anime decks out there. That would be really, really interesting, but you got to be a hell of an otaku in order to watch that one and get that deck and actually be able to use it. That's another specialty deck that probably you would not get unless you really knew tarot inside and out and backwards and forwards and were bored with all the other decks.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't tend to go like crazy with specialty decks, but again, as I say every week, the ones I own for mostly the artwork.
Oh yeah.
There are some that I just, again, Crow's Magic. Probably if you spent time and you'd never been exposed to another deck, that would be a really fun one to play with. But it was a little weird for me, because I'd been exposed to, like, the Robin Wood and, Rider Waite and various other that were related to those.
Yeah, the classics ones.
The
Housewives Tarot is really fun to play with as well. I reviewed that at one point. I've actually got a copy of it, physical, that I can look at. And that one's really fun. The Devil card in most decks is, a big demon, that's subjecting humanity to tortures of hell and stuff like that. In the Robin Wood deck, it's two people that are chained to a chest trying to crawl towards the light. Well, in the Housewives Tarot, believe it or not, it's a chocolate cake.
That's fucking awesome.
It is. It's great. But when you think about the symbolism of the devil and bondage to the material, it's perfect.
Well, and the funny thing, too, I mean, we'll get into it when we talk about the devil, but, I mean, it's a self-inflicted, you know, entrapment or attachment. It's like, I mean, in Buddhist terms, it would be like the ego, you know, holding on to things, like the whole concept of attachment, just because you haven't learned to let go of it.
Mm-hmm. And I just pulled up the Housewives Tarot. For the cards that we're talking about tonight, the Chariot is a station wagon with two ladies that just got done going to the grocery store. And the cans that they're holding up and talking about each other, to each other, are mnemonics for the Chariot itself. Travel, risk, gain, choices. With strength, it's a picture of a box, and it says Scrubbo soap pads, and it's got five or six Brillo pads, SOS pads, outside of the box, displayed at, like a commercial would be. But those associations are right on when you take it out of the context of the 50s housewife kitsch. The symbolism is still right there. Strength is about strength of will. Well, in this case, this is a tool that has, you know, a hidden feature of it that is helping you accomplish your goal. The Chariot, you go to the store, you get stuff, you come back, and once again, you're using the physical objects around you to get what you want.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's see.
I thought I almost had a someone interested in a reading tonight, because I was talking to him earlier. I was like, hey, I could either do a reading for you and send you the results on Tumblr, or you could call in the show and have a reading done live.
Hey!
And
that would be
fun
to do a live reading.
He's running away for a night of smoking at a hookah bar, so apparently that's not going to happen right now.
All right. So, this is interesting. I pulled up the fours in the Housewives Tarot. The Four of Cups, the choice between the three that you have and the one that you might have. It's three tumbler. It's a housewife standing there. She's looking at three empty whiskey tumblers and one full one that's being offered to her by an unseen hand. So that's cute. The Four of Swords. This is interesting. She's got a facial mask on. Her hair is up in a turban like you just got out of a shower. She's got cucumbers on her eyes, which is another stasis or retreat. The Four of Pentacles is a lady who is protecting her china cabinet with four dishes in it. And the Four of Wands is a lady laying on a hammock, supported by the four rods, while she has a martini glass in her hand. So those are cool. Those are right on as well. That's really great. This is a good deck, as long as you can pull the kitsch out of it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're going to have to be sort of familiar with the whole idea of it.
Okay.
Trying to see if I can arrange another reading.
This is why
talking to people on Tumblr is useful.
The as far as the symbolism is, I would, if I were going to start out with tarot now, probably the way I would go about it is I would get a very traditional Rider-Waite style deck. Morgan Greer's good, the actual Rider-Waite deck, one of the Radiant Rider-Waite decks, Robin Wood, something along those lines. And start learning the tarot from the basics like that. And then after about, say, 2 years of actually playing with the decks, having them around, looking at them, looking at derivative decks from those where the symbolism is mostly the same with just a few quirks different, then I would start looking at different specialty decks like the Whimsical Tarot. Like the Hello Kitty deck, which I've also got, like the Housewives deck, where it's still the same symbolism, but the artwork is so different that you really have to force your brain to interpret the card instead of just glancing at it and going, oh, that means that. Then after probably about 4 years of reading with those decks, then I would go to something really complex, like the numerology deck, like the Merlin Tarot, where the only artwork is in the court cards and major arcana, or the one of the Celtic tarots that we've got upstairs, which is only artwork with the major arcana, and then very, oh, what is that word that I'm looking for?
Intricate?
No, not intricate, but it's, oh, it starts with an A. Okay. The artwork is very abstract. That's it. I hate when you get brain lock like that. The artwork on the minor arcana is very abstract. And to my mind, using a deck that is solely focused on the major arcana and the minor arcana are so abstract as to be useless kind of defeats the purpose of having a tarot deck. If you're going to use a tarot deck, the readings that you're going to be doing are going to be for people here. When I was working with Cabrina's Psychic Answer, which was a call-in psychic line, 15 years ago, to make some extra money, one of the things that would happen, I'd get four different questions. Tell me about my love life. Tell me about my finances, what's going to happen in the future, and what do I do for fill in the blank? And those were the four basic questions. It was really rare if I would get somebody talking about their spiritual life or a specific situation that they needed information on or somebody that wanted to find something. But those four basic questions, and if you're using a deck like the Merlin Tarot, where it's solely focused on the major arcana, which are the archetypes, which are the spiritual and the upper level, the superconscious level for interpreting, that's cutting out the entire purpose of having questions like about my love life, which is about here and now, which is cutting out, you know, tell me about my finances, which is also here and now, which is the definition of what the minor arcana are. They are focused on the combinations of the archetypes, but also as they relate to life here, whereas the major arcana are all spiritual, all archetypical. They're, you know, in the upper realms, in the airplane, in the higher levels, however you want to describe it. Those are the, this is how it is, the very black and white showing of a situation. Whereas the minor arcana are all about combinations and the gray areas. And I hate it when I do this. There's so much that I need to say and so much I want to say, and I start repeating myself, and I can't think for a little bit. But yeah, so getting a deck where it's not focused on the here and now, save that for several years down the line when you can interpret the cards without having to have the symbols in the artwork. Because those types of decks are very spiritually oriented. They're very much about helping you in your progression in an alchemical sense, where you're trying to turn yourself from the base of the lead base of the existence here into spiritual gold, which was what alchemy was all about. Actually, it wasn't about actually converting lead into gold.
Yeah, I mean, alchemy is a fascinating subject on its own. I mean,
oh God, yes. Okay, let's see. half an hour. I guess we should talk about a spread or two, maybe. Actually,
yeah,
you know,
let's go for it.
Well, I tell you what. Instead of that, let me address something that I've been meaning to talk about for a little while, and that is the cards that you have. Part of finding the meanings of the cards and working with the deck, once again, is coming up with how you interpret the card. When you're doing this, you want to start coming up with mnemonics for the deck and for the card itself. A lot of times the card names and the card associations, they were set back, you know, 3-4 centuries ago. In the case of the Rider-Waite, it's very, very slanted toward the Catholic Church and Christianity. I mean, I can't really think of a Celtic equivalent of the High Priest or the Hierophant, but you can immediately associate the Hierophant with the Pope, and that's deliberate. So you want to come up with a mnemonic that when you see the card, it's a short little word or phrase that immediately triggers all the associations in your brain of what that card means. For example, let's go back to the Hierophant. You draw that card, you lay it down, and the immediate association, the immediate mnemonic a lot of people use is the Pope, which should, when you think about it, trigger off Hidebound, the way it always has been. No change, this is what it is, and infinitesimally small steps forward. And conformity. And all of that is related into the way people perceive the papal office. It's not about, these days, it's not about expanding the church. It's not about redefining and getting more privileges. It's about keeping the church the way it is now. And all of that is associated with the mnemonic, the Pope, which for the Hierophant is an excellent mnemonic. Let's talk about one of the ones from tonight, the Four Pentacles. The immediate mnemonic most people use is greed, okay? Because here's a guy clutching four pentacles to his chest. He's clutching one to his chest. He's standing on two of them, and he's holding against the wall behind his head a fourth pentacle, okay? He is hanging on to his money hard as he possibly can. He's a miser, a lot of people use that mnemonic as well. And this is, you know, once again, the meaning of that card is hanging on to your cash, okay, not spending it. Now, it can be a good thing where you're putting it into a bank account to save it for a rainy day, or it can be very, very bad where you don't want to spend 10 cents for a piece of gum when you can go over to the penny machine and get the same piece of gum that, you know, doesn't taste as good for a penny, you know.
Joy, guess what?
What?
I've got a caller.
Oh, excellent.
His name's Brenton. He's from out east somewhere. I'll bring him on and he can introduce himself.
All right, excellent.
Hello, Brenton. Welcome.
Oh, hey. So am I with everybody now? Or?
Yes, you are.
Yeah, you are.
Okay.
Hi there.
Oh. Hey, Brenton here.
So, you want a reading? Is there a specific issue you want to focus on, or
something
just want
you
a general
talk about
kind of
or
thing?
Ask?
Could you do just like, could you just do like a general reading for me?
Sure. Do you have anything specific that you want to ask about?
Let's see. That's kind of a tough question because there's not really much going on in my life. But
okay.
Well,
I tell you what, why don't I just do a standard Celtic cross layout and we'll take a look and see what's going on there.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I've laid out the cards, and what I'm showing as the first card, the start, you've got the Four of Swords, which we were talking about tonight. It's you kind of feel like the main problem that you're having right now is that everything seems to have stopped. Nothing's really going on. It's just it's like a bump in the road where you're having to take a forced to take a break for a while.
Yeah.
What's crossing you right now is the Justice card, and that one stands for balance and equality, fairness. It can mean legal matters. The base of the matter is that you have a lot of skill and that you've spent a lot of time honing, and you want to be able to use it, but right now you're not able to. Here recently in the past, we have the Emperor, which we talked about last week. A father figure, secure and successful, stable and authoritative. I'm just going to read these cards out, and I'll string it together in a reading in just a bit.
Okay.
What's going on currently is an unfulfilled struggle. It's the Five of Wands, where it's like you're fighting for no purpose. Coming up in the future, you've got the Magician, and I'll reveal that in just a little while. Let's see. The way you see things around you is the Moon. There's a lot of, you see your life as consisting of a lot of secrets and a lot of hidden things around you that you don't know what's going on. What everybody else is seeing around you is the Six of Cups, which is you relying on friends to help you out and people from your past. What's hindering you is a sense of betrayal, apparently, because in that position, we've got the Ten of Swords, and the ultimate outcome I'll tell you about in a minute. Typically, in this reading, what I'm seeing is that things have come to a halt in your life progression. You're not really sure what's going on. You've probably just gotten out of school. You spent a lot of time honing all of these skills, and you're not sure what to do with it. You're feeling pressure from the people around you, especially older gentlemen, probably a father or possibly a grandfather, to do something with your life. And it's causing a lot of conflicts and a lot of unnecessary fights. Coming up in the future, and I'm talking 6 to 8 months or so, you're going to be given an opportunity to actually use the skills that you've got to get what you want. Like I was saying with the commentary cards, you feel like there's a lot of things going on that you're not aware of, and people around you are feeling that you rely on your friends a whole lot. You are being very, very cautious with what you do because you're afraid of being betrayed. You're afraid of being hurt. But more than that, you're afraid of somebody stabbing you in the back, not meaning to. Now, the ultimate outcome of all of this, not only are you going to be given an opportunity to fulfill your life the way you want to, but the ultimate outcome here is the Three of Cups, which, as you remember from last week, is the party card. You're going to get into an end situation where you have the things you want and you can relax somewhat and enjoy things, okay?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, for the most part. I guess I'd have to think about something, meditate and such, but
okay, well, that's
pretty
good.
Much.
Is there anything else you need to know about?
Can you do one for anxiety for me?
For anxiety? How do you mean?
I don't know. Can you tell me something like, kind of how coping with it is going to become for me?
Well, I can see what I can do. Let's see. Well, I did a 5-card spread here, and oh, interesting. Okay, when I do a 5-card spread, it can be one of two different ways, and I'm not only telling you this, I'm telling the people that are listening to the podcast too. It can be either a specific question where you have, you know, cards that you want to see to answer the question, or you can just do 5 cards as a gestalt of the 5 cards for like a yes or no question.
Okay.
In this case, the second reading, where it's all the cards taken together to give you an overview of something, is how I did this. The 5 cards that I've gotten are the 9 of Pentacles, the Queen of Cups, the Page of Pentacles, the 6 of Swords, and the 5 of Cups. Okay. Now, looking at this, first off, there's no major arcana there, so this is very here and now based.
Okay.
The 9 is usually seen as not anxiety, but arrogance in a lot of ways. It's solitary wealth and accomplishment. The Queen of Cups is looking into her cup, and she is more concerned with what's in there than what's going on around her. The Page of Pentacles is a young girl bringing information about money. The 6 of Swords is Charon's boat, essentially, going from here to, across the river to an unknown destination. And the 5 of Cups is crying over spilt milk is the mnemonic. Because he spilled 3 cups, the contents have fallen out, but he's still got 2 left that he doesn't realize that he's got. Taken as a group, there are several cards that can be taken negatively, the 6 of Swords and the 5 of Cups. The 9 of Pentacles, along with the Queen of Cups, is telling me that there is more going on in your own head than then allows you to pay attention to what's going on around you. Okay? Those two, taken along with the 6 and the 5, say that you're very focused on things that you don't need to be focused on. And that's what's causing anxiety right now. The Page of Pentacles is the wake-up call. She's coming and going, okay, you are looking at the wrong areas. You are worried about the wrong areas. You are overthinking your situations, and you need to look around and realize there's other things around you. You need to wake up.
Okay?
And so that's what the when I just thought about anxiety and laid these out, that's what that is telling me. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Yeah, actually, a lot of that... I can see that's been going on, actually.
Okay, cool. Glad I was able to help. Now, sorry, my cats are jumping all over me for no particular reason.
Cats don't need a reason to jump all over you. They're cats.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so let's see. Mnemonics. We're getting back to mnemonics again. So, yeah, those are some examples of... using mnemonics in a reading. There's a lot of detail on each of those cards that I did in the 5-card reading that I'm sure experienced tarot readers who are listening to this are going, but you missed this aspect of it. But when you're doing a 5-card reading like that where you just want to get a general overview of something, the mnemonics are usually the best thing to remember. 9 of Pentacles, vanity. That's what I was trying to come up with, is you are focused on the good things in life and what you have, and that's, you know, that's being vain, not necessarily to no purpose, but actually to the distraction of things that are around you again. You know, if only I had that, I would be happy. If only I had this, I would be happy. You know, I have all of this money and all of this wealth, but it's not enough, and maybe I need some more. And, you know, so mnemonics really do play an important role in giving you a starting place to do the interpretation of the card. And unfortunately, as much as I would like it to be something that you can just develop in a few minutes, you can't. This is something that you really have to develop over time after playing with your cards and talking with them and looking at them and going through them. And that's where the little pamphlet that comes along with the booklet or that comes along with the deck is really useful. I mean, you're talking about 24 pages maybe in the same size that your deck is to tell you all about 78 cards that you've never seen before. So they have to go into really brief descriptions of each of these cards. They'll give you keywords. They'll give you a mnemonic. They'll talk about a couple of interpretations. They're not going to get as in-depth as the actual, you know, book like the Robin Wood Tarot, the book, does, where it's got three, you know, pages on each of the major arcana. Whereas in the little pamphlet that came with my tarot deck for the Robin Wood deck, it's got maybe 2 inches of space to put all the meaning for this one tarot card in there. So that's where you start getting the mnemonics from. And that's one of the reasons why also, you know, you spend the time with the deck and you look at the book when you can purchase one that comes along with it. Let's see. Okay, since we've touched on it anyway, let's talk about the 5-card reading. I said that there was 2 ways to do it. One is a timeline. There's actually 3. There's a timeline. There's a yes-no question, which is like the gestalt that I just did. And then there's also a actual... Oh, God, I just did it again. My brain went... And I lost my train of thought. The timeline for the 5-card reading. Typically, what that is it is far past, near past, present, near future, far future. And you read it left to right, exactly like that. And it can tell you about what has happened and what could be happening. Now, the warning here is that it's not super accurate. Like any tarot reading, it only gives you what could happen if nothing changes. But even by knowing what could be happening, you start changing your decisions to try to manifest it. So just by getting the reading, you start changing what could potentially start happening. With a gestalt reading where you take the sum total of the cards and what the general flavor of the group of cards is telling you, that's a little bit easier. Like I said, the mnemonics come into it, but more than that, the tone of the cards. I've mentioned this before. There are cards that are dark. There are cards that are light. There are cards that are in between, and that's another, you know, reason to spend time with your cards, because they will tell you what they mean. And when I say that, I'm talking about we've got 5 cards here, and these 5 cards, some of the artwork is light, up and bright, some of the artwork is dark, down and mean, some of it is in between. But more than that, the actual worker's card will show you that this dark card, let's say the 8 of cups, okay, is actually a good thing. The 8 of cups, as a mnemonic, is leaving what you have for other adventures. But this is the guy that is at night leaving behind 8 cups behind him and going off on a journey, okay? So the symbolism there is he's got all of this that he's had, And he's leaving it to go off into the unknown, and it's nighttime. Well, nighttime is dark. Nighttime is scary because you don't know what's out there. But this is a positive card because it can be a positive change. And spending time with the deck will tell you that. Now, when you see it in a five-card reading and just look at it, you'll see dark. You'll see the nighttime, and if there's other dark cards around, other nighttime cards, other cards that are associated with negativity and depression, you're going to associate that into the rest of the spread as being a negative card. Okay? Now, when you start breaking it out, like I did, and interpreting the individual cards as part of the whole, it will probably tell you whoever it is needs to move on to something else because they're in a rut, they need to break out of it, and that will work within the context of the reading saying that this is a bad time in your life and you need to look at other options. And so, you know, that's how the cards are going to start telling you what they mean. And this, you know, this is a good thing. This is what you want to happen. And this is what makes somebody who is a very, very powerful reader separate from those that just read the little card mnemonics that come with them, who's just starting out or who is actually just dabbling. And I say dabbling like it's a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. But there are differences between somebody who is a good reader and can string a reading together and can give you information that you need to know and can pull information that you have not told them out of no place and tell you it directly and just shock the crud out of you like I've done multiple times to people. Somebody who is just, okay, using them as a deck of playing cards, essentially.
Yeah, for sure. Huh. How weird. The little chat room has been misbehaving.
Really?
Yeah. My ID just changed from Woodwose Radio to Woodwose Radio 9500, and Woodwose Radio logged out. I don't know what's going on at all.
Oh, goodness. I guess things are just, I don't know.
Maybe I'll just close the chat for tonight, then.
I don't understand computers most of the time, even though I work on them professionally, so.
Fair enough. Yeah, strange. I don't even know how to close the thing, but anyway.
Anything to add to all of that?
Not that I can think of. Do you want to call it a night, then?
I think it's probably a good place to end. I mean, we went over the cards. You gave us a lot in the beginning. You carried the show by yourself, and I'm appreciative. Folks, I'm going to try not to do this again. I had actually thought that I had managed to get in touch with Brian and cancel tonight's show, and we went and got to the store before it closed and came back, and I've got, you know, messages on my answering machine and emails going, Joy, are you there? And I'm like, crap, I thought I canceled this.
My bad for not checking my email.
No,
not a
it's
habit
okay.
I have.
Anyway, so I'm going to try not to do this again. Actually, Brian, I did want to talk to you about the possibility of maybe moving this to Wednesday when it would be a little bit more convenient for me because I have Tuesday and Wednesday off. But since I work third shift normally in my mundane life, working from 7 p.m. Monday night to 6 a.m. Tuesday morning means I come home and collapse and want to stay asleep as long as I possibly can. Now, 12 hours, you know, does seem like a lot of sleep to get, but I've got a bus trip in there. I've got, you know, normal day-to-day. We've got to go out and do laundry type things on Tuesday that we do. Because that's the only day Mary has off with me. So do you think maybe we could shift Tarot Talk to Wednesday nights?
Yeah, sure. I'll just make that change on the schedule and let people know. And yeah, sure.
Okay, cool.
It'll work for me for sure up until probably April when my work schedule changes to like finishing at 4 p.m., which will give me an hour to get back here.
Okay.
But, you know, I mean, by then, who knows? We'll decide to have changed to Saturday or something.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Possible.
Especially, but
I was reluctant to suggest this before because you had all the other podcasts going, but since you canceled most of them and we're still continuing with this, it's a little bit more convenient for me.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it gives me a couple, like almost 3 hours to get home from work and, you know, do what I got to do before the show. So, yeah, that totally works for me.
And that'll also let the church people, you know, call in mass and protest us or something.
Exactly.
have to accommodate everyone.
Of okay. course. All right.
All right, so I don't have anything else tonight. I don't think Brian has anything else tonight. Y'all heard about the schedule change. So tomorrow night, Wednesday, we're not having a show because that's a little bit short notice. But the following Wednesday, probably close to the end of February, and that is the 27th. Yep. So the February 27th, that show is going to be on the next two major arcana and the fives. So let's see, what are the next two major arcana? there's the chariot, there's strength. The next two is the hermit and the wheel of fortune.
The hermit's my favorite in every deck, so that'll be really fun to talk about.
It's interesting, the magician's my favorite in every deck, and I was just thinking about the wheel of fortune the other night.
Well, it's weird, because actually, to decide on a deck, I always go with the magician and the hermit.
Oh, cool. That's
yeah.
neat.
So, like, if they have really nice hermit and magician, I'm like, I will definitely look into this deck. although I have to admit, I was disappointed one time. I bought the Cosmic Tarot because of the hermit that I happened to see on Tumblr. It is a gorgeous hermit card, a blue-skinned, like, hippie mystic smoking up, sitting there with, like, his lantern. And he's covered in, like, zodiac signs on his skin and stuff like that. It's a really gorgeous card. And then all the other cards are, like, really bad, like, 70s, 80s kind of cheesy clothing. It's just like, I was like, why did I buy this one? Oh, God, it was awful.
So the lesson here is don't judge a deck by one card.
Judge it by two, and I hadn't seen the magician, so I didn't know.
Well, once again, you know, when you go in to actually buy the deck, there's a lot of cases where they have ones that you can actually go through and look
That's
at
true.
All the cards.
Although the Cosmic was a rare one. Like, I haven't seen that one very often.
I do know that a lot of cases, places like Amazon will put up a selection of cards. But if you want to do a some really deep Googling, if your Google foo is up to it, there's sites out there that have the entire deck, scanned images, so that you can look at them, the whole deck, before going out and buying it.
But again, Eclectic Tarot is a really great site just for even like a look at a half dozen of the cards.
Oh, yeah.
Minor and major arcana, and usually the back of the deck, just in case you're curious to see what it looks like. But
once
yeah.
Once again, okay, and this is the advertisement section. Once again, we want to give a shout out to Robin Wood and the Robin Wood Tarot deck. That's the standard one that I use. She also wrote the companion book that goes along with it, the Robin Wood Tarot, the book, original name. Both of those can be ordered from her site. I also use the Orphalese Tarot. It's a computer program that you can get with customized decks. There is a thriving community with it. You also get spreads that go along with it. There is a free version. It only allows you access to three decks and three spreads. I encourage you to please go out and buy the full version of it. So that you have access to more than just those three and as many spreads as you want to have. Brian, do you have anything?
The there's a lot of online buyers, or sellers, I should say, for decks of all kinds. Amazon's the one I typically use, but you can go on, like, Azure Green, or any of the metaphysical online stores. But definitely, I encourage you to support your local metaphysical shops.
Mm-hmm.
Get out there. They'll usually have display books for all the decks they offer or can order. You can check those out directly in store. You can talk to them about any number of other things. Usually the staff are pretty knowledgeable about crystals and trinkets and tools and incense and any number of other things they offer there. So, you know, while you can shop online, if it's easier for you, by all means do that. But if there's a metaphysical store or two near you, get out and meet these people. It's a great way to get into the community of your local tarot community or pagan community or what have you.
And if you want to talk shop with them, a lot of the metaphysical stores these days have in-house tarot readers. You can probably sit down with them if they're not doing anything or not doing a reading and talk shop with them. It's a great way to meet other pagans, meet other community members, get additional information, and just, go support your local shop anytime you possibly can.
It's a really useful way to find courses and things if that's more your thing. Not everyone's really self-oriented when they come to learning things. There will be plenty of courses available. There's a few online ones that I've seen. Get out to your metaphysical stores, talk to some people, meet other tarot readers. Talk about the decks that they have, because, if you want to, talk about crazy new decks or specialty decks, talk to the people who use them.
Mm, exactly. And one last shout out. I am a member of the American Tarot Association, the ATA. It is an online group of professional tarot readers from across the world. They certify tarot readers. We talk shop about them. There's reviews of decks in the newsletter. There are people all over the world, and I haven't met a single one face-to-face, but some of them are some of my best friends. So that's another resource that you can hook up with, too. And then there's, like any other graduation certificate, membership in this group, does open certain doors for you. And you're taken as a little bit more serious than somebody that just dabbles in playing around with tarot.
It's true. If you can join like professional associations of any kind that will boost your reputation, I guess, your experience points, if you want to talk in
yes, we
RPG
level up.
Terms. do look for them. I know that you can become an associated exorcist for $5 with a certain group.
Get a free online clerical ordination.
Oh, yeah, the Church of All Worlds or whatever it is. The Church of...
Universal Life Church.
That's the one. I was a member of them, too. So,
oh,
yeah.
You still are. It's lifetime.
Yeah, the thing is, it's not even valid in Canada, so...
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a member of it. So is Mary. We are both ordained ministers and very proud of it. And
if you want to order the certificate and all the cards and trinkets, it's $40.
Set up your own church.
Seriously, folks, get out, get to your local metaphysical stores and meet some people and explore whatever interests you. Have a great night. Thank you again for joining us. Thank you, Joy.
Thank you. I enjoy doing these, really.
So do I. I definitely do. It's fun to have that, banter and that sort of thing. And, it's great to be able to refresh my memory about tarot again.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we'll see y'all on Wednesday, the 27th, for the next tarot talk, the Fives, the Hermit, and
the Wheel of Fortune.
The Wheel of Fortune, yeah. Brain fart again. Good night, everybody.
Night, all.